Welcome, everyone, to another episode of the NBA Podcast. I'm Brian Toporek, and we're going to continue our division previews today with the Southeast Division. Before we get underway, just wanted to remind you that you can follow us on Twitter at the NBA Pod. In our bio, you can find all of our Twitter handles, so give us a follow as well. You can also find us on iTunes, so please subscribe, download, leave some reviews. We would love any feedback. And we're being hosted this year on FanRag Sports, so check them out on Twitter at FanRag Sports. And for their NBA content at FanRagNBA. Joining me today, as always, are my two co-hosts, Morten Jensen and Sarah Chalea. How's it going, you two?
Brian, I was doing so well until I saw our podcast's official Twitter account follower amount. We are under 200 people out there. What the hell are you doing? Come on.
Yeah, give us some follows, people. The NBA Pod on Twitter.
We gotta eat, people. We gotta eat.
That's true. Yep. My dog does not feed himself, unfortunately. Sarah, how's it going with you?
Going well, thank you.
That is good to hear. We also have a special guest today joining us from All You Can Heat and Hoops Habit. We have Alana Tahauer. Alana, how's it going?
Great. Thanks for having me on. I'm excited to talk some basketball with all of you.
For sure. Did I totally butcher the pronunciation of your last name there?
No, you did good. I'm proud. Thank you.
All right, cool. So let our listeners know where they can find you on Twitter and then where else they can find your work.
Yeah, so on Twitter, it's just Alana Tahauer. So that's A-L-L-A-N-A-T-A-C-H-A-U-E-R. And then, like you said already, I'm on All You Can Heat and Hoops Habit, which are both under Fansided.
Very cool. All right, so we are going to get underway. We'll start with your Heat, Alana. And I want to start.
My favorite topic ever.
Good. That's why we brought you on. I want to actually start with who I see as the X factor for this team this year, and that's Justice Winslow. You know, he hurt his shoulder in January, but before that, he was still kind of underwhelming as a sophomore. It was almost like a competition between him and Stanley Johnson, who could be more underwhelming from that 2015 draft class. So, you know, he's heading into his third year. He's supposed to be healthy. He's going to face some competition for playing time. They have a bunch of kind of versatile guys who can plug in at either the two and the three. So what do you see from Justice this year? Do you think he wins the starting gig? Do you think he gets to put his slow start to his NBA career behind him? Or do you think this is kind of who he is?
I'm personally still keeping the faith of him just because he is such a good kid. And I know that doesn't necessarily mean anything when it comes to talent on the court, but you can tell how badly he just wants to prove everyone wrong. And I think that, you know, people have made a lot of comparisons between him and Kawhi Leonard, but I actually kind of see it more as like a Jimmy Butler type of story where, you know, he didn't really get a lot of opportunity or enough opportunity coming in. And, you know, Butler didn't go through an injury, but he wasn't given playing time. Whereas, you know, Winslow had to go through that injury. So I'm hoping that this year he's going to, you know, bounce back and prove everyone wrong. Like you were saying, it's going to be a little bit tricky to see what his role will be just because he missed out on a lot of, you know, the chemistry being built last season. But you can definitely tell that both Pat Riley and Eric Spoelstra have a lot of faith in him, and I think they're going to work with him to, you know, make sure that he has a consistent role and that he feels comfortable once he does come back.
Interesting. That's good to hear because I was high on him coming into that draft, and the Boston Celtics allegedly were trying to mortgage all of their draft picks for him. So, you know, there is hope for him yet.
Yeah, definitely. And I, you know, I think the injury couldn't have come at a worse time, to be honest, just because he had so much pressure riding on him after that lackluster first year. And then for that to happen, it was just kind of, you know, it was definitely a blow to his ego, I think. But like I said, he's such a hard worker and you can really tell that he's willing to do anything to just kind of prove everyone wrong. And even he doesn't really seem the type to really need the spotlight, which is good because I think, you know, this particular Heat team is really good at just playing team basketball. So I think he'll find a role. It's just going to take a little bit of time.
Yeah, I think that makes sense. They don't need him to be like a 20-point per game scorer. And kind of the same thing with Stanley Johnson. Like they ideally will profile, I don't know if 3-and-D guy is the right term because neither one is a great 3-point shooter yet. But like they're in that mold where like a complimentary offensive player, make your money on defense. And then whatever you give on offense, that's great.
Right.
The Heat, you know, they Justice started slow and had kind of a disappointing year, but they actually did have some good years from both Goran Dragic and Hassan Whiteside. So
Absolutely.
Mort, I want to ask about Goran first, because you've been watching Eurobasket and he's been lighting it up over there. What do you expect from him this season? Do you think that star turn at Eurobasket's going to carry over?
Yeah, I probably a little bit more of the same than last year. He's still a phenomenal player, and I'm so glad that he kind of broke out again last year because he signed that big deal, kind of underperformed for a long while, and then last year, after Winslow's injury, more or less, he started picking up some steam and started scoring a little bit more. And that's just when he's at his best. It seems like when you try to put him in a pass-first mentality, things just go awry for him. He really needs to score the ball, get into the lane, be like the Manu Ginobili clone that we sort of pegged him to a couple years ago. And he's doing that at Eurobasket as well, playing alongside Luka Doncic as well. And he seems to have found a pretty good balance between when giving Luka shots and when he has to assert himself. And I think that will carry over to another season. So I'm expecting another 26 for him for the upcoming year.
Just to be clear, 20.6 assists.
Obviously.
Yeah, okay. Well, 26, I'm like,
Oh
it's going to turn
not
into,
26.
yeah,
Yeah, 20 and six.
right.
Right.
Right. Okay, cool. All right, then, Sarah, Hassan Whiteside, let's talk about him for a second because he's turned into one of Kawhi Leonard's biggest threats for Defensive Player of the Year, or so he hopes. He always lobbies for that award. What do you see for Hassan this season? He also broke out in a big way last year.
Yeah, hey, his numbers just keep going up. 17 points, 14 rebounds, 2 blocks per game. I don't see any let up in that, honestly. Ideally, you'd see maybe the free throw percentage keep going up. But I mean, actually, I have a question for Alana because I know some people who have complained about his screen setting. Is that a gripe that you have as well? And what would you like to see him improve next year?
Yeah, I mean, I think that's an interesting one because for me, I was just kind of so happy to see him improve in so many other ways that I think I kind of that doesn't bother me as much just because I think everyone has their, strengths and weaknesses. But what I will say about that is I think he's much more open to criticism now than he used to be. I think he had kind of a chip on his shoulder coming in just because he was overlooked so much by, by the league. He was sent overseas and then he was in the D League for a while. So I think now he's more open to the fact that, people are recognizing his talent, but there is still room for improvement. And even, just from watching what he's been doing on his Snapchats, even he's really putting in the work and he's even trying to shoot some threes. Will that actually carry over to the season? Probably not. But he's definitely trying to expand his game. So I think that, the people who are bothered by that, I think it is probably something that he'll take into consideration moving forward.
That's good.
Yeah, that's interesting. I really hope we start seeing him take threes. That would be fantastic.
He's looking good on Snap, so I mean, if he wants to go ahead, I'm fine with that, at least to try it out a little bit. But I don't think that's where his focus should be by any means.
Right, probably. So that actually leads into my next question, because the Heat, they actually brought in a stretch big man in Kelly Olynyk, 4 years, 50 million. They basically handed out money like it was just going away, because they also signed Dion Waiters to 4 years, 52 million, James Johnson to 4 years, 60 million. This is all after Gordon Hayward spurned them to sign with the Celtics. That was their first choice. And they just inked Josh Richardson to a 4 year, $42 million extension. So, do you think they're going to grow to regret any of those deals, or do you think they're all pretty sound?
Well, I guess what I'll say first is that I think James Johnson and Deion Waiters 100% are worth the money. I think that they've shown such tremendous growth. And they, even though they had great seasons, I think that the ceiling's much higher for both of them. I think that this year is going to be way better even than last season was for them. I think in terms of Jay Rich's contract, for me, it's less about the money and more that the fact that I think that's going to help his game improve just for the fact that it shows that they have confidence in him. He's a player who gets in his head a lot, and I think that he struggled a lot with that towards the end of last season. So I think now that, the organization clearly has done something to put it in motion that, you know, they trust him long term, I think that's really going to help him. Whether or not that, you know, figure is a little steep, yeah, for now I think it is. And I don't know if they'll regret it, but I think for them that was more just to show him, you know, hey, we believe in you, rather than, you know, the dollar sign. In terms of Olenek, I wasn't very pleased with that, to be honest. I think he's the kind of guy who, and I think Tyler Johnson said it too, you hate playing against him. So, you know, from a fan perspective, I wasn't excited to have him aboard, just because, you know, he is kind of known as a dirtier player. But I think he does go really hard for the team that he's on. So as long as he, you know, grows to have good chemistry with these guys, that shouldn't be a problem. And I think that even if he doesn't stay long term, I feel like that contract's still movable enough. I don't think they really dug themselves in a hole with that one necessarily, because, you know, he is regarded as a pretty good player, and I think that one would be easy to move if need be.
If nothing else, you prevent Hassan Whiteside from getting his shoulder dislocated.
Well, yeah, that too. I mean, I guess you take away that risk factor by having him play for you instead, so that's a great point.
Right. Although I guess he's going up against him in practice, so maybe there's even more of a risk.
You know, they seem like they're good friends already, though. Hassan had him over for dinner a couple times. So it does seem like they're, you know, the chemistry is there. It's just that kind of did surprise me. I didn't really expect that from the Heat, but I mean, that I trust Pat Riley 100%. So if he sees something, then I'm all in too.
Yeah, I mean, I agree with you. Like, on paper, I don't find fault with any of those contracts, including Jay Rich. I might just be irrationally high on him, but I think he's really, you know, a great player, and I think he could be starting. I think there's definitely room for growth. I mean, his field goal percentage has not been stellar to start his career, but, like, there aren't many players in the league who can average at least 1-3, 1 block, and 1 steal a night, and he is one of them. Right. So I think he provides a nice combination of offense, defense. I mean this in the nicest way possible, but I kind of feel like the Heat are now Portland East. Like, they spent all this money and they're now capped out, and like, I have them comfortably in the playoffs this year, but I don't know how they turn into a top three team in the East. Right. Do you think there's a way they can get there, or are you in my camp with that one?
I'm in your camp. Here's the thing. Actually, to answer the previous question as well regarding the contracts, because that plays into this one. In a nutshell, like, in a vacuum, each contract signed was decent. The problem is that it happened on the same team. So you don't really have a superstar leading that whole pack. You have a bunch of great role players, you know, starters as well. You know, a role player can't be a starter. That's the hill I'm going to die on. you know, James Johnson, Deion Waiters, Kelly Olynyk, fine players, fine deals. It's just that you kind of locked up that team for a long while with no flexibility moving forward. So you kind of have to hope that Deion turns into something that you probably didn't expect to, or that James Johnson builds on what he's done already. And like, James, I believe, is 30, so his value is probably not even going to be significantly higher, even if he does improve further. So the real bet here is Deion Waiters, to some extent Olynyk, and then, as you mentioned, Josh Richardson. Josh is the big man here. He's the guy who has to just break through everything and become at least like a pseudo-level all-star for this thing to really work and for the Heat to become like a top three team. Having said that, even if they don't, I'm kind of liking this group. It's easy to root for this one. It's good guys. It seems like the ball is moving. They're sharing the load, and you don't have this one guy asking for 15,000 shots a game, which they kind of need. But at the same time, it's refreshing that they don't have it. There's a slight 2004 Pistons vibe to this team, just without the results probably. But hell, I can get behind that. I can get behind that team. And you know, if by February or March, Dwayne Wade comes back to that group, why not?
Yeah. And I mean, you didn't even mention Tyler Johnson. He's another one.
Tyler,
right?
As well. Like, what is he now? Like 24?
Yeah, somewhere around there, 23, 24.
That's plenty of time.
Yeah, I mean, they definitely have a lot of good young players. So it's not, this isn't a slight against the team building strategy, because like, I don't know what, option A was get Gordon Hayward. Option B was retain the core. that just finished the season 30-11, and I don't know what option C was because they didn't have the cap space to go out and sign a bunch of new players. Like, you just have to use your bird rights and go over the cap to retain everyone. So it's not, I don't want to sound like overly critical of Pat Riley here. He didn't really have a third choice, but I'm a little worried about, I just don't see a championship ceiling for this team, but like, that might not matter. Maybe he just is okay with, like, my team's going to be in the playoffs every year. If things break right, we could make it to the second round or even make it to the conference finals. If Justice Winslow really improves.
And Bam Jay is Rich, a stud.
If Deion Winders. Yeah.
Bam, I'm right, so excited about him.
Yeah. Yeah. So talk to us about Bam for a second, Lana. What do you think about him?
It's funny because on draft night, Heat Twitter exploded when they took Bam. We were all like, what? Like, who is this kid? What are we doing? And then, like, right when, things started getting released about him, including, like, his stats and just, like, video clips from, college and whatever, we were all like, oh, okay, never mind. Like, we all take back, not even our criticism, but just our surprise. And seeing him in Summer League, like, he's a beast.
Yep.
It's going to take time. But I think having him around, and I liked Willie Reed, but, Willie was not as versatile by any means. And I think Bam can play alongside Hassan. I think he can back him up. I think there's a lot you can do with him. And he's so young, too, that I don't know. I think that was a great move, and I'm really excited to see what he can do.
Yeah, he got pigeonholed in Kentucky a lot. Like, this, mm-hmm. I feel as though, and I'm going to show my age right now, but I remember Joey Dorsey from Memphis back in...
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Back in
late 2000s.
Yeah, 2007, 2008. Like, they, John Calipari had Bam play a similar role to Joey Dorsey, mm-hmm. and that was kind of ridiculous because Bam has a much more diverse skill set than Dorsey ever had, and I think that's kind of why that he was available at 14. I mean, he could probably have been picked a little bit higher. Whether he's a legitimate four man, I'm not sure. I think he probably is going to spend a lot of time, taking both the four and the five, and mm-hmm. down the line, I wouldn't be surprised if he is a true center. However, I still think he has the potential to go out and like hit a 15-footer, 17-footer maybe. That jump shot seems to, or the jump shot mechanics rather, they seem to be there. So his ceiling is higher.
I think it's important too to have guys that can do different things, just because injuries hit them so hard in the beginning of last year. And at one point they only had, I think, like three guys coming off the bench, one of who was Udonis Haslem, which, I mean, I love him, but how much can he really do at this point? So I think having, players who can play different roles and come in, alongside other guys or behind them is really important, just because you never know what's going to happen. Hopefully, the injuries don't come like they did last season, but you don't know what happens in this way. There's a little bit more of an insurance policy on, having a more guys available off the bench.
Yeah. It's hard to gripe with their depth, if nothing else. Like, they go at least like a legitimate 10 deep. So before we move on, I want to ask you, Alana, they started 11-30 last year. They ended 30-11. So which was the real Heat team? The one that started slow and looked like they're heading to the lottery? The one that finished on a 60-win pace? Or is it somewhere in the middle there?
From the get-go and even like three or four games in, people were calling me crazy because I kept saying, like, this isn't us. Like, just give it some time. The injuries, are a huge factor. Chemistry needs time to build. So by the end, it was great to see. But to be honest, I really wasn't surprised that they were able to bounce back in such a way, just because the level of talent was there. It was just a matter of figuring it out and working together. And like I said, they really do play team basketball. There's not really one or two guys who, like we've all touched upon, need the ball all the time and need to be taking, endless shots. So, 30-11, finishing on that note, I definitely wouldn't call it a fluke. Is it possible that they're going to have bumps in the road again? Absolutely. But I really wasn't surprised that they were able to bounce back in such a way. So I'm definitely excited about them. I'm higher on them than most people are. I think people are kind of going to say that they're somewhere in the middle, but I feel like they can continue this streak.
Interesting. That'll be a fun thing to watch heading into this year.
Absolutely.
All right, let's move on to the Charlotte Hornets. I think the big story with them, they were pretty quiet over all this offseason, but they did somehow, they basically, the Atlanta Hawks just gave them Dwight Howard. Like, they had to give up absolutely nothing of value to get a three-time defensive player of the year. So, Sarah, what do you see Dwight Howard doing in Charlotte, and how would you think he's going to affect Cody Zeller in particular?
I'm so glad you came to me with this, Brian. I'm just slightly worried about that last part that you mentioned there. Because Zeller, one thing that he does really, really well is run the floor hard, and he creates spacing for them because they really don't have shooters. They didn't last year. They don't really have any more shooters this year. Lost Bellinelli, who was not great for them, but shot 36%, I think, from three, which was still second best on the team of people who took 100 or more threes. So, yeah. So they really kind of need what Cody does. It's funny when you think from the eye test, he seems pretty good at this. And then I looked it up with Synergy. He's fifth in the league in transition points per possession. Oh, wow. 1.5 and 96.9 is his percentile. It's ridiculous. So it's not that he and Dwight can't coexist. Dwight, on the other hand, is he's in the 83rd percentile in pick and roll man. So, I mean, it's great to have guys who can do both. I just worry about how much you can play them together. You can't pull Dwight out to the high post very much. He's not super effective out there. Maybe you can pass it a little bit, but who's going to really jump on him? You know, he's not going to shoot that elbow jumper. Cody can a little bit. So you almost have to pull him if you're going to play them together and you get in the half court set. But last year, I think he took like 66 shots outside the restricted area all year. So that's not really his thing either.
Yeah.
So, and I would be slightly like, I would be tempted almost to try to start Cody, bring Dwight off the bench.
Oh, wow.
But there's a couple problems with that. A, you would immediately piss off Dwight Howard.
Which is not like, hard to do these days.
Yeah, how quickly can we disengage Dwight Howard? Pretty quickly. And then on top of that, as you mentioned in our outline, Brian, they're very thin behind Kemba.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, Dwight being so great as a role man, you kind of need a guard to play off of. So I don't know how much that would work. You kind of have to start Dwight, but I don't know. I'm not psyched about it. I'd love, you know, they don't have to be mutually exclusive, having a pick and roll man and a transition man. It's not that they can't coexist, but it's definitely going to take some maneuvering.
Yeah. I mean, a couple of thoughts just on Dwight and then the front court in general. Like, I might be the only person left on Dwight Howard Island, but I really don't think over him. I mean, yeah, I think he gets a bad rap because of, like, the whole Orlando thing and then the Lakers and the Houston. Like,
so basically everything he's done in his career.
Like, his personality and his off-the-court antics over the last 5 years have just, like, everyone is over him. But, like, he wasn't that bad in Atlanta. Like, I would dare say he was effective. And then for whatever reason, Mike Budenholzer just decided to not play him in the playoffs. Which seemed to spell his end in Atlanta. But, like, he put up decent numbers last year. I mean, the big thing with Dwight is, like, we got frustrated with him for so long because we're like, all right, cool, you're a great rim roller and you're a great putback dunker. Like, expand your game, expand your offensive skill set. And he never did. But, like, at this point in his career, he's not going to. So as long as Steve Clifford can just say, like, look, we don't want you posting up 10 times a game, like, we want to just use you as a role man basically and then just have you, like, gobble the offensive glass and put back whatever shots our non-shooters miss constantly, that's great. So, like, I conceptually like him there, especially with Kemba, who's an elite pick and roll guard. Sarah, I think you're right that the two are going to have trouble playing together, which is a big problem because Zeller, I feel like this is going to be, I'm going to shout out James Hollis again with his them idea. Zeller, if you're like an advanced basketball metrics guy, you realize that Zeller is like one of the best screen setters in the league, but it's not something that like jumps off the screen when you're watching, but like you go in and dig into the statistics and he really is like an unbelievable screen setter. So they're going to need that, especially because they don't have shooters that can reliably knock down shots. and Dwight gives a little bit less in that. Like, if he's not getting the ball, he's not gonna, you know, he's not gonna put forth as much effort in terms of off-ball cutting and all that stuff. So I think you do need Zeller on the court. So it's seeing how those two play together is going to be a fascinating subplot. That said, the Hornets, like, they fell into the toilet when Zeller got hurt last year. I think he missed around 20 games. They were like, you know, if they went on that pace the whole season, they would have threatened the Brooklyn Nets for being, you know, the league's worst team. So if nothing else, like, Dwight's good insurance for them. Sarah, I like your idea conceptually of putting Dwight off the bench, but as you said, that will just make him, he's out. He's checking out immediately. So, for what they paid to get him, it's a worthy gamble, but I don't know how it's going to work out. It's definitely an open question heading into the season.
Yeah, and I actually have some numbers to make this even more interesting or potentially problematic, because Zeller's first two seasons he struggled, and that was because he was mostly used as this sort of pick and pop power forward, not from three, but like 15, 17 foot range. So his average shot distance in the first 2 years were 8.4 and 8.8 feet from the basket. Then that changed 2 years ago to 4.9, and last year 4.5. So basically, he started taking more shots around the rim. He started diving towards the rim a whole lot. And that goes to show, because in the first 2 years, he shot well over 30% of all his shots from beyond 16 feet. That dropped to under 14 in these last 2 years. So if you take him away as the rim runner and the diver, yeah, then you're probably going to bring him into a role that he just has shown that he cannot play in. So you kind of solve Cody Zeller beforehand. Now you just have to figure out a way to keep having him productive while also solving Dwight Howard. So there's two ways to look at it here. Is one, can Dwight Howard be solved? Maybe. I mean, if you solve Cody Zeller in this system, Dwight might have a chance. And if he doesn't, do you drop Dwight Howard in the middle of the season and go, you know what, we tried, we gave up virtually nothing for him, we can ship him off for virtually nothing again, and then just hang on to Zeller and run him? Like, that, I think that should be your mentality going in, because Zeller obviously is the long-term priority.
I guess there's no harm in finding a taker at the trade deadline if you can, if it, like, just goes completely south.
Yeah. I mean, I'm sure someone would be interested. I mean, there's always this lore about Dwight. Always.
The Bulls.
He's over 30. He's not very productive. I mean, sure, he's overpaid. It makes sense.
He reminds me so much of Derrick Rose in the sense that, like, they both started out as these super hyped up guys who everyone loved. And they were so, you know, like, everyone loved the way that they were off the court and on the court. They were great teammates, etc. And then just everything fell apart in their personal lives, and now I feel like you can't rely on either of them. And I mean, like you were saying, Brian, like, in terms of the actual stats, like, Dwight's not that bad, but I just don't feel like you can rely on him for anything. He's so, like, hit or miss that do you really want to put an entire team on his shoulders again? And the same thing with Derek. I don't think he had that bad of a year, but, you know, he missed that one practice and then went, you know, MIA, and then he never really explained himself, and it's just like you can't rely on these guys anymore.
I mean, the off-court stuff is a legitimate concern, that I'm not going to deny that. So it's, I think, you know, Clifford has the reputation of being kind of a player's coach, and, like, hopefully he can connect with Dwight, but if not, it definitely could go south. I'm not saying it can't, I'm just, like, cautiously optimistic about that. One thing I am more than cautiously optimistic about, Mort, is Malik Monk, who somehow, inexplicably, fell to 11th and goes to a team that desperately needs shooters, as we've been talking about. So what do you see for him this year?
He is the best shooter in the draft. So obviously he's going to help that line a little bit more. I mean, him replacing Bellinelli, yeah, I'll take that. The problem with Monk, and that's, I mean, he's sort of like a Ben Gordon back in the day, like Bulls days. He's not a creator. He's more of a guy who needs to play off of others, but then when he gets an open look, you can damn well, you know, Dame will ensure that know that that's going down. I mean, Ben was a dynamic scorer. The same with Monk. I mean, I think Monk put up 47 in a game this year as a freshman. Yep. Come on. I mean, that's ridiculous. He's sneaky athletic. He has a first step that he needs to utilize a little bit more, but I think that's a question of experience and development as well. So I'm not sure he's going to have like the biggest year right off the bat, but long-term, perfect fit, especially alongside Kemba, who's going to draw in so much attention. Kemba has never been like a big assist guy. I could really see that change with the arrival of Monk.
You know, so it actually leads into my next question here, because I kind of think Monk is going to be playing on the ball a little bit more than he did in Kentucky, and I can see him kind of doing what Devin Booker did for the Suns over the last couple months of the year, like not being a full-time point guard, but being at least a complimentary ball handler, especially off the bench. I mean, I'm projecting he's going to come off the bench to start the year. So, Alana... Our boy, everyone's favorite, Michael Carter Williams.
Oh man,
is questionable for the start of the season. He got PRP on his knees, which have been problematic for a while now. So the Hornets are like really scary thin behind Walker. So you know they could use Monk as a theoretical backup point guard. I don't think that's how you definitely want to use him, but you could. Do you think they need to address that position over the next month or so, or are you okay with going in and just saying, Kemba, you got to carry this team?
No, I mean, I think that they should have addressed it before Michael Carter Williams even got injured. I mean, I feel for the guy, but he was terrible in Chicago. and I know that, you know, Fred Hoiberg's style of play is definitely not for everybody. It worked well in college. It doesn't translate to the pros, and he has a hard time letting go of that. But even so, most of the guys, you know, managed to make it work while Michael Carter Williams was just it was a disaster. So I, you know, now with the injury especially, I definitely do think that they need to figure something out because, you know, what if, you know, Kemba gets injured? Then what happens? It's never really a great idea to pinpoint your entire offense on one guy, even though Kemba is great and I love watching him. You know, I think he'll have help from guys like Monk, Batum, even Jeremy Lamb, but I don't know, if I were them, I would definitely try to figure something out and quick just as a backup, if nothing else.
Yeah. I mean, if you're going into the season counting as Michael Carter Williams as your primary backup, no matter, even if he's healthy, like that's not great. That's really, well, you could probably do better than that. Sarah, somehow, despite having no shooters, the Hornets ranked 14th on offense in terms of offensive efficiency last year. But where do you see them getting buckets outside of Kemba?
I mean, yeah, you asked who can they rely on to be consistent. I think, honestly, your hope is Malik Monk eventually. You know, I think it's probably not fair to expect him to put it all together at the next level right away. And he's coming off this ankle injury that, do we even know the status? Last I saw, they just said it was significant and it's still bothering him.
Oh, that's right.
Yeah, so I don't even know if he'll be ready to go right away or not. But I do think that's the goal eventually, is for him to be that guy, because looking at the roster, there's really not anybody else that you can count on to be consistent.
Yeah, you know, I mean,
Tatum's always been up and down. Jeremy Lamb, you know, Marvin Williams. You just don't know.
Yeah, MKG has still yet to develop into the offensive player. Yeah, defensive stud, of course, but offensively leaves much to be desired. I guess Dwight and Cody Zeller are like your hope, but that's what I'm worried about.
That's for the Hornets. Scary thought.
Yeah. Yeah, aside from backup point guard, which is definitely the biggest concern I have for them heading into the year. Alana, as you said, if Kemba goes down, it feels like this team is going to spiral quickly.
Yep.
Let's move on to the Atlanta Hawks, and this is going to be a rough one because the Hawks of 2 years ago, the 60-win Hawks of 2 years ago are no more. They lost Millsap in free agency. They sold very, very, very low on Dwight Howard. So, Sarah, our boy Dennis Schroeder is now the face of the franchise, in theory. How do you feel about that heading into the season?
Not great, Brian. Not great. I like him. He's played well at Eurobasket this summer, but I've just never been a big fan. I feel like you have to pick something else up. He's got great quickness, but you need like one more thing. He has to either add a jump shot that's consistent, or he has to be a really great finisher. Like, there's not that one other thing yet. He's not a great distributor. I saw a lot in Eurobasket, he's running this kind of more of a pick and pop where he likes to throw it back, like a bounce pass back to a big who's kind of popped out. That's nice. He was doing that well, but you also got to think, like, who's he going to give it to? Right.
John so. Collins.
Yeah.
Okay. Go ahead, Mort.
Oh, yeah. Wake Forest guy, rookie, is extremely productive. I think he left the NCAA in PER. He was even a year younger as a sophomore. Like, he was, he's like freshman age, but has two seasons of college ball. He's not a shooter. That's the problem. But he's athletic as hell and runs the floor, and he's a great interior scorer. So he has that one guy he can pass to now who can at least finish plays and score at a decent clip. But having said that, I agree with you entirely in terms of Schroeder. Like, and we'll add one thing to it. He doesn't defend, which is extremely problematic. Remember when he came into the league with this reputation of being a Rajon Rondo clone? Well, he can't shoot, but he can sure defend. Yeah, about that.
Yeah, I mean, he's got Dedmon now to throw it to. Dedmon can catch the lob. He's a decent role man.
we're just searching for scraps here. Like, next up, we're
going to
be like...
Yeah, that sigh about sums it up.
Yeah, that's the Atlanta Hawks in a nutshell. I mean, Schroeder, there's a good chance he takes at least 20 shots a game this year, and I don't see any way he's north of, like, 42% shooting from the field. I think it's going to be a lot of Dennis Schroeder at the expense of some of their other young prospects. Mort, since you brought up John Collins, I want to talk about their two first-round picks from last year, Torian Prince and DeAndre Bembry. Bembry, he tore his tricep, or he has a strained tricep, sorry. So he's out for 4 to 6 weeks, but hopefully should be ready by the start of the season or close to it. Prince, you know, he showed some flashes, especially at the end of last year. So do you have high hopes for those guys heading into this season?
How could I say this delicately?
Uh-oh.
Not a whole lot. They were drafted pretty old. Let's agree on that one. And they were not productive. First of all, that's a huge concern coming into the league when you are that age, not having a productive season. Like, that's a Chris Dunn problem as well. those types of players just simply do not project as being good down the line, and it's not like they didn't get minutes. Like, Prince averaged almost 17 minutes, for example. I mean, he did better as the year progressed, so that's something, and I'm sure that they're going to improve, but it's not like they're going to be huge assets unless, you know, Budenholzer just pulls a rabbit out of a hat. I'm not really high on anyone on that roster, really. I mean, outside of Collins, but I recognize as well that he's not really a great fit for the current NBA. So when you really look at that team, they need Michael Porter Jr. next season.
Yeah, I was at the start of the summer, I was pounding the table and saying they were going to be the worst team in the NBA next year, but the Bulls, I think the Bulls have them pretty well on lockdown.
That's why I didn't say Luka Doncic. The Bulls are getting Doncic.
Right. A lot of, speaking of disappointments, Kent Bazemore, 4 years, $70 million deal. In the first year of that deal, he regressed significantly from the year prior. So Tim Hardaway Jr. is gone now. The Knicks paid him $30 million more than he should have gotten. So Bazemore, in theory, has an avenue to more playing time. Do you think he bounces back this year, or do you think the lack of established established offensive options, you know, without Millsap, without Howard, do you think he kind of is who he is?
I mean, part of me wants to say that he kind of has to bounce back because they need, like, someone to do something. So, like, statistically speaking, I mean, that someone could more than probably be him. I don't, sometimes it happens too where I feel like guys have a lot of pressure on them after a new deal. And I'm not saying that's the case here, but it could have been. And especially now that they're still figuring things out, maybe there's a different type of role they could find for him. Obviously, they're going to have a lot of question marks this season. But I'm just going to try to be positive and say that, you know, he kind of has to bounce back. So he's going to, and he's going to be the guy because there's no one else. But I only time will tell, I guess, with that one.
Yeah. I mean, it's really, especially if Bembry's limited to start the season, they have very little in terms of established depth on the wing. So I think you're right in the sense of, like, it can't be worse because they're going to need something from him.
Yeah, like, someone needs to step up. So he's there. Like,
right. Right. So, he's a warm body who's played right. in the NBA before. So that's something. Sarah, they did not strangely embrace the full tank after letting, you know, you think they like sold Millsap for pennies, or they sold Howard for pennies. They let Millsap walk. It seemed like, you know, they're going all in on the Luka Doncic train, but then they signed Deadman, they signed Ersan Ilyasova. So they have like an established front court, at least of like, again, guys who have played in the NBA before. Do you think those two guys can spare them from being, you know, in the bottom 3, 4, 5 in the league?
Yeah, you're going to think I'm crazy, but I don't know if I've just been looking at Eastern Conference teams too long this morning. But, like, I'm going a little crazy, but, you know, I'm looking at it, and I could absolutely see that happening. You, like you said, you've been banging the drum of them being just dreadful, if not the very worst team, then very close to it. I could see that happening, and yet there's a part of me that would not be completely surprised if Bud somehow snuck them, if not into the playoffs, at least like 10th in the East. I don't know why, but I just think they have some pieces. They have some junk in the truck. I mean, it's like, you know, Nico Brusino, Belly, yeah. Deadman, Pembry. I still have some hope for Taurean Prince. I mean, you're talking about a guy who averaged like maybe 10 minutes per game altogether until February. So just getting more reps, getting more shots up. There's something there. I don't know.
Not a whole lot, though.
You're right. yeah, but I mean, Bud comes from the Spurs tree, you know, that's like imbued into them. You figure out how to cobble together these solid pieces into a team that's actually kind of decent without being overwhelmingly talented. But all that said, I'd like to look at, they were fourth in defensive rating last year. So you kind of have to think, you know, how much of that are we putting on Dwight Howard? Obviously a lot. But they did pick up Dwayne Dedmon. So I'm going to throw some numbers at y'all. And this is pretty much just to stoke the ire of snotty dripping James Holmes. Like, he's going to just be so pissed. But okay. So defensive rating for Dwight Howard last year was 100. And obviously, these numbers have a lot to do with who else they're on the floor with at the time. So, but just for fun. All right. Just for kicks and giggles. Yeah. So Dwayne Dedmon's defensive rating last year, 99. So very, very comparable. Defensive box plus minus, 2.8 for Dwight, 3.2 for Dwayne Dedmon.
Oh.
And Dedmon played 17 minutes, I think he averaged last year. Dwight averaged something like, I don't know, 29.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So they're per 36 numbers. You give Dwight 16 points, 15 rebounds. Dwayne would have been at right around 10 and 10.
Hmm. Yeah.
Not bad. So I feel like you kind of, I know, not you've always been a big Dwight guy. Yeah, and the rest of us have not been.
Yeah.
Right? So I feel like you can kind of make up for that. You kind of fudge the numbers there. And I like a lot of their other pieces as solid, you know, decent players. I do think the biggest question marks are, you know, I wish they had that one guy that you could really count on, you know, and yeah. I don't love that Schroeder's that guy. So,
yeah, I kind of think Ilyasova is going to be bigger than expected because, like, on the Sixers last year before they got rid of him and let Dario do Dario things, Ilyasova was like he was the key to Embiid breaking out. Like, Embiid needed a stretch four next to him, and Ilyasova filled that role very well. So especially because Dedmon is somewhat limited offensively, I think having Ilyasova there as that stretch four presence is going to be big for the Hawks. And Sarah, I don't think you're crazy. Like, I at first, for a while, I was saying they're going to be the worst team. And then I looked at the Bulls and realized Zach LaVine's going to be out till February probably, and there's no competing with them. But, like, there is a four or five teams in the East. Like, I'd say the top nine are pretty well separated. And then, like, the Bulls are the separated at the bottom. But then you have Brooklyn, the Knicks, the Pacers, Orlando, the Hawks. Like, any one of those teams could feasibly finish 10th or 14th in the East. Like, yeah, it's not, they're all going to be in that, like, 25 to 32, 33 win range. So it's going to be close, I think. So I don't know. They might not be, I don't think they're going to be Bulls bad anymore. I'll say that much.
Well, I've figured out why, Sarah, why you're so high on the Hawks, because I just noticed or remembered that Marco Bellinelli is on the team.
I love me some Belly. Yeah.
Like, he probably adds like 10 wins to your total.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, sure. Although Dwayne's at least like 5.
Yeah.
So. Right.
So yeah. Right there.
All right, yeah. Let's keep the factory of sadness going. We're going to move on to the Orlando Magic.
So sad.
Oh my God. Alana, are the Magic finally going to let Aaron Gordon play the four? Is it going
to
happen this year?
I don't know what they're doing to him, but, like, I feel like they're sucking all the talent out of him, like, year by year, to where there's just going to be a complete waste. Like, I feel terrible for him. I was so excited. I thought he was going to be, like, this game changer. And then if you don't utilize a player like he needs to be utilized, like, good luck. You know, and I just don't, I don't know what they're doing. And I feel like on paper, the roster doesn't even look that bad. Like, I have guys I like in there, but then I'm like, what's the narrative here? Like, I can't figure out what their strategy is, or like how these guys are going to like meld into one another. I don't know. The Magic just confused me so much.
Yeah. Mort and I have basically railed against them for the last year. Like, it's kind of getting bad. So, I mean, they, like the Blazers last summer and the Wizards last summer, the Magic also made some ill-advised spending splurges, most notably Bismack Biyombo on a 4-year, $70-plus million deal, which seemed to portend the end for Nick Vucevic. It seemed like, all right, you're bringing Biyombo in. He obviously can't play next to Vucevic. You're going to trade Vucevic, right? And then they didn't. And Vuce started 55 of his 75 games or something like that. So what did the Magic do about having two centers who can't play together?
You know, I'm sitting here and I'm trying to come up with something clever, and all I realize is that I'm really, really depressed about this team, so I can't even give you anything clever. I'm not sure.
You know what this is? This reminds me of, though, you know how Boston like hoards draft picks? I feel like Orlando just hoards players that could be good in other systems, but then they don't know how to use them, so they're just sitting there. Yeah. You know,
and
like
they sell them for like pennies on the dollar.
Right. Like, and then they're like, oh, we didn't figure this one out. Like, let's try another guy, and then they like, you know, sign someone to way too much money, and it just continues on that path.
Yeah. Yeah, they did. Like, Mo Harkless, they gave away for a top 55 protected pick, and now he's starting in Portland. Ugh.
I'm probably playing Vucevic as a four.
I mean,
yeah, I know. What? Hey, I didn't make the roster, Brian.
Come on.
No. I'm not saying he should start. Relax.
Oh, okay.
Come on. Calm yourself, damn it.
I hate this team.
No. I mean, I'm probably splitting the minutes with him at the 4 and 5 because he needs to get minutes. He's better than Bismack Biyombo is, as far as I'm concerned. But you kind of have to play Bismack when you're paying him 17 goddamn millions. I mean, God, that contract is just... But no, I mean, you unleash Aaron Gordon. That's really all I'm focused on. And Jonathan Isaac, I suppose.
Yeah.
Like, I mean, you see what you got. I hope that Isaac is a stud, but not for the Magic's sake, for his sake, because they really shouldn't be rewarded with anything. They are the Southeast Division's Bulls.
Yeah, that's a fair way to put it.
However, Mario Hezonja, I don't think he's as bad as we all think. I think he's stuck in a bad system. I think he's stuck in a bad culture. And I think when he gets out of Dodge, he's going to look better. He's not going to live up to his draft hype or his draft slot, but he's going to live up to something, you know, being a productive player. I think he's got every tool in the back to be that, and it boggles my mind why he hasn't been given more chances as well. So,
yeah. Do you think a team should be trying to buy low on him then?
Oh, for sure. Like, I don't understand why it seemed like the Hawks, as we just talked about before, aren't all over this guy. Or, you know, the Bulls or Pacers, honestly. Like, East teams who look really bad, who are going to rebuild, should look to trade for Hisanya. Like, start off easy. Just offer a second rounder, see if they bite. It's the Magic. They might.
Right. Hey, if they want to trade, if they want more in their front court, if they want Jahlil Okafor, I would happily take him.
No, don't put Okafor through this.
I mean, he's already suffering in Philly. He's just going to be in trouble until he gets out of his rookie contract. Sarah, I mean, we talked a little bit about Hisanya, but like, just like every position, basically, they have a logjam at the 2 and the 3, too. They got Terrence Ross, who they got in the Ibaka trade. They have Evan Fournier. They signed your boy Jonathan Simmons. They have Aflalo, and they have Hisanya, who is inevitably just going to be buried on the bench and play like 5 minutes in 30 games. So how do you see them divvying up the minutes at the 2 and the 3?
I'm going to tell you that in my notes, the very first note that I made for the Magic, I just wrote in capital letters, WTF? That's really all I have. Like, it's such a shame because they had, like, they brought over Chad Fourcier, who's, I think, one of the best player development guys you can have. But it's not even about that, because you can't develop guys when you keep having these log jams at certain positions. Like, first they hoarded all these front court guys. Now they have every shooting guard / maybe forward that, you know, they could find. I don't understand why. You know, that's really their biggest problem, and we've said that for probably years now, is roster construction. It just doesn't make sense. I think they have what could be a decent team, and I thought that a few years ago. They had some pieces that I really liked, but they shipped a bunch of them off to bring in things that didn't fit, and that's really all I have to say.
You mean Jeff Green on a one-year $15 million deal? Yeah, I thought that was brilliant, by the way. Yeah.
Yeah. All right. They sent out Tobias Harris for salary dumps and then used the money they saved on Jeff Green. Yeah.
Oh, good Lord. Like, Rob Hannigan, he just got hired in Oklahoma, which is, like, fine. I mean, but he really screwed the pooch on this one. And here's what I'm kind of confused about. When you look at what his reign in Orlando, like, he did poorly, right? And he got fired within, I don't know, even know how long he was there, like 3 or 4 years?
4 or 5 years, yeah.
Yeah, something along those lines. Like, if then you put that in contrast to Garpax, who's done a worse job over the past 5 or 6 years, and they get a vote of confidence from ownership, that just goes to show how much ownership really has to say in all these things. Like, in Orlando, they're kind of desperate because they want to be relevant really soon because the ownership is old and yada, 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 want to see some success. I think we as podcasters and writers and everything, we need to pay more attention to ownership and the dictations that they put through everything, because otherwise it's just not a fair market for general managers. I mean, Hannigan getting sacked was... You could argue it was, oh, he should have been given a larger chance because look at the Bulls. Or you could say, oh, well, the Bulls are just idiots and they should have fired their team, you know, 5 years ago. So,
right.
But it's worth mentioning that ownership here, especially in Orlando's case, really, you know, plays a vital role in how they go about their rebuilding or building structure mentality.
Yeah, I think that's a fair point, although a counterpoint would be a lot of their moves over the last 5 years have been kind of these short-term win-now moves, and they finally seem to have realized, like, oh, we can't shortcut our way into championship contention or even a playoff spot. Like,
yeah, there's no winning now. That's not an option.
Right, so they finally seem to have embraced a rebuild, but, like, even still, why are you signing Aaron Aflalo if you have done that?
And why, like, you're making your franchise point guard a non-shooter.
Right. That's my next question. I want to be slightly positive about the Magic because we've just crapped on them for 10 minutes. So In Elfrid Payton's defense, he did play somewhat well after the All-Star break last year. He averaged around like 14 points, 8 assists, 7 rebounds, something like that. He did fall into Frank Vogel's doghouse at some point earlier in the year. And they do, again, they brought in, I think, Shelvin Mack, who they signed. They still have DJ Augustine. So they have other options if he, again, falls in the doghouse. But, Alana, let's say Elfrid carries over that post-All-Star break momentum, comes in the year hot. He's in a contract year, or if he doesn't sign an extension, which presumably he will not, he's going to be a restricted free agent next summer. So what can he do this year to prove to the Magic that he should be their long-term point guard of the future?
See, I kind of took this as the other way around of, like, how they can convince him to stay at this point or want to stay, mm-hmm. because I feel like he has the capability of being more than he is right now, but it's going to take the right people around him. And the way that the Magic have been, you can't really even call it a rebuild, just the way that they've been stacking up their roster doesn't make any sense, like I said earlier. So I feel like it's less of what he can do, and it's because I feel like no matter what he does, they don't really seem to have a plan in place. So it's kind of like, oh, well, if they happen to want him to stick around, you know, they're going to make that happen. And if not, it's not really, I don't see what they're going to be basing that on. So I don't know, if I were him, I would want to get the hell out of there. But it kind of depends, I guess, what the future holds. It's just so confusing to me. Having him there right now with the guys that are in place. Like, as I said, I don't really see where their head is at. It's not a rebuild because you have guys, you know, that are talented enough, like Aflalo and Ross, but then you have young guys who should be on a rebuilding team. It's a hot mess. I don't really know what else to say.
That's the best way to describe the Magic, just a steaming hot mess.
Yeah.
Boy, it sounds like you are not sold on the Elfrid Payton era in Orlando.
I just can't imagine a team being successful with a starting point guard who can barely break 30% from downtown. Not in today's league, which is a shame because, don't get me wrong, I like him. He plays well. Had he been in the 80s, I would have loved him. Loved him. Because his energy, his defensive activity, his intensity level, love all of it. But the guy can't shoot. It's a Ricky Rubio syndrome all over again. And again, I like Ricky Rubio, but the dude still cannot shoot. Meaning, the ceiling is just lowered because of it. It's a new day. It's a new age. If you can't do those specific things, you're not going to meet a whole lot of success. I mean, that's just the way the cookie crumbles. And again, we still see a lot of players who can't shoot get drafted somewhat high. I mean, just we talked about Okafor briefly. I mean, that was another one.
Mm-hmm. I do think it depends on the system, though, because there are teams who need point guards who can carry more of the offensive load. And then there are teams who, you know, if they're stacked with shooters elsewhere, it's not as important. Although I do definitely agree that, like, you don't really have much of a place in this league now if you're, you know, if that's not in your skill set. But I feel like it also has to do with, you know, being successful, and in this system it's just not working.
Yeah, like if you are, and we're going to talk about this team momentarily, the Wizards, and you have John Wall, who's a shaky shooter, he's improving but shaky, and you kind of have great shooters alongside him and Bradley Beal and Otto Porter, yeah, then you could get away with it. But as you alluded to, Alana, like in Orlando, hot mess. You can't really rely on anyone else. I mean, sure, you have Evan Fournier. Then what? Like Ross? Yeah, not feeling that one.
Ross isn't a bad shooter.
No, but I'm not. I mean, he's not a high volume guy who's gonna draw defenses the way like a Kevin Durant would, right? I mean, he's not the type of guy who's just gonna. I mean, you know what you get with him, and because you know what you're going to get, you're going to get an open dunk or you get a contested three-point attempt. Like, it's easier to guard.
Yeah, yeah. Well, I'm going to give the sunshine and rainbows take for the Magic. I'm going to at least cautiously predict that Payton does carry over his hot play. I think you just need shooters around him. And I think part of the problem, Moritz and Alana, as you both alluded to, is like, Aaron Gordon's not a great shooter, so when you played him at the three, especially, it was like Fournier was the only shooter on the damn floor. So once they got Ross, put him into the starting lineup, moved Gordon to the four, and now you have Fournier and Ross. That's at least a little more. Your spacing's a little bit better. So I'm going to say, like, unless they just do stupid magic things and put, like, Jonathan Simmons in the starting lineup, they're going to have Fournier and Ross starting alongside Payton. I think he plays well. I think Fournier bounces back. I think Ross actually has a really good year. He was, you know, he got lost in Toronto behind Kyle Lowry and DeMar DeRozan, but I think he's a good player. So, there is an avenue for the Magic to finally start putting things together. But, and, like, their coach, Frank Vogel, is a good coach.
Yeah.
But I'm just, like, the last 5 years make me think it's just going to be another, 32-win season for the Magic, somewhere around there.
Yeah.
All right, let's finish things up with the Washington Wizards, who, you know, had a great year last year. Their top three guys are all just monsters. Their bench, on the other hand, was not great. Like, Trey Burke was basically the anchor of their bench, so unsurprisingly, every time they went to their bench, they started getting blown off the floor, which really came back to bite them in the Boston Celtics series in the second round of the Eastern Conference playoffs. So over the summer, they traded for Tim Frazier. They signed Jody Meeks and Mike Scott. Alana, do you think that's enough to keep them afloat once Wall and Beal are catching a breath on the bench?
I always get criticized for my view on the Wizards, but they just don't really impress me. And it has nothing to do with John Wall, because he's obviously an enormous talent. And I think that he deserved the contract he got. He's rightfully the face of their franchise. It's just one of those teams to me, though, that, like, on paper, they look good, and individually, you know, there's talent there. But, like, I don't know. I guess, you know, maybe it is just what you're saying, that their starters are great, and then afterwards it's kind of like, okay, then what, you know? So the momentum of their game is, like, they're great when, you know, those few couple guys are running things and are you know, high-volume shooters, and then they just hit this wall of, well, now, you know, guys need to rest, and then these other guys come in, and it's kind of like, okay, this is kind of what the team looks like now. So, you know, people have them being great in the East this year, and I'm just not impressed by them. I don't see them doing as well as people think.
Interesting. Oh, we will have our predictions for the conference, or for the division, after we wrap things up here, so I'm excited to hear where you have the Wizards now. Sarah, Otto Porter had a monster year last year, signed a 4-year max deal over the summer after the Wizards didn't offer it to him. The Nets signed him to that offer sheet. The Wizards matched because that's how it was always going to go. Do you think that career best year carries over into this year? Or do you think he, like Kent Bazemore, kind of takes a step back after signing that massive deal?
I think he can maintain. Just looking at the numbers, he made these incremental improvements each year. Like, you know, there was not any huge jump. So there's nothing to me that feels like he can't keep that up. Probably the most impressive thing is some of his shooting percentages last year. Mm-hmm. So, you know, maybe that fluctuates a little bit. But otherwise, I mean, it wasn't like he had like 20 points per game. He's at 13.4 last year, up from 11.6 the year before. Rebounding numbers just up like 6. I mean, he had a good solid year, and there's no reason for me to think that he can't repeat that. At least I don't know that he's gonna make another leap, but I think he'll definitely be around that level again.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, he this is a topic near and dear to my heart, since Otto was a Georgetown guy for 2 years. This is who he is, right? Like, he was the number 3 pick and then didn't impress right away, so Wizards fans quickly soured on him. He's not going to ever be a 25-point-per-game scorer. Like, he's best cast as this complimentary do-it-all third option on offense, which, when Wall and Beal are healthy, that's the role he can fill. And, like, we've seen this in Washington the last couple of years. Before Otto, it was Trevor Ariza. Mm-hmm. Like, John Wall is excellent at finding open corner 3 shooters, and Otto added that to his game. He was not that consistent of a shooter back in his Georgetown days. He had to be more of a takeover scorer. But like now he can kind of fill that Trevor Ariza role and then some. So, you know, he's come a long way from like being the Shaq and the Fool, the wing version of JaVale McGee on Shaq and the Fool. And I'm thrilled to see him. I'm really happy he got rewarded for his, you know, for his solid play. I think he's going to be a big part of the Wizards puzzle this year. But I'm with you, Sarah. I don't think he's like going to break out as a 20 point per game scorer. I think somewhere like, you know, kind of, I don't want to say he's going to like be Andre Iguodala in Philly, but like that's more of the role he can fill. Like he's an underrated passer too. So I could see him doing like 15, 7, and 4 kind of at his ceiling.
Oh, I think a little bit more.
Okay, yeah, I didn't want to come off as a homer. That's fine.
No hot takes here.
Yeah,
I think when you sign a max deal, especially in this climate now where general managers are a little bit more hesitant to give out these big deals, I think there's going to be like an expectation of greater production. Whether that's going to come right away, I think it's definitely in their plans to have more plays run for him and try to shape him into being like a more, take more ownership of the offense. I don't think they are at all satisfied with 13 a game. I think they've, I think the Wizards are looking at it, well, that's a great place to start. That's a great place to go from here. And they would probably like to see him end up at like 17, 18 a game. Also noteworthy, like he shot 43 from downtown. He actually shot only 42 on corners. That's not only, that's a good percentage, but he shot better above the break. Meaning,
oh, interesting.
Yeah, and that was there have been written a few articles about like his versatility as a shooter. Like from inside the arc as well, he is one of those pure shooters who can just who is efficient virtually everywhere around the floor that he is.
Yeah,
I would probably sacrifice a little bit of that efficiency for great volume because he was like he had a true shooting percentage of 63 last year. If that declines to like 60, but his volume goes up, I'll take it. Of course.
He only took 10 shots a game, Mark. That's a good point.
Yeah, exactly. Like if you bump that shot total up to just 13, just three more shots a game, even four, just one more shot a quarter, really. Why not? Why not? I mean, he could make the most of it. So I'm definitely on the Otto Porter could get even better. Also, by the way, I just want to point out he led the league last year in turnover percentage. Like he made sure that he didn't turn the ball over a lot. He only had a turnover percentage of 4.9.
He's still relatively young too, right?
I think he's 24.
Like he's only 24 or something. Yeah.
So I think he is a lot better than people, you know, give him credit for. He's kind of like Jimmy Butler, like low turnover, but efficient and efficient, although he's like reverse Butler in the sense that he's efficient as a shooter, whereas Butler was efficient as a free throw shooter, and that's probably the next step for Porter as well, because he only got to the line 1.5 times a game last season, which is a ridiculously low number for a guy playing almost 33 minutes a night. So that's also part of the plan, I hope, for the Wizards. They, I mean, last year they had Wall and Beal average, what, 23 apiece?
Sounds right,
something along those lines. They need him. They need him to like spread it out just a little bit more, and when they do that, the big three is there.
Yeah, I mean, shout out to all my Syracuse people out there. I know you remember when he single-handedly murdered your zone. Like as you alluded to, Mort, he's, you know, he catches the ball at the elbow. He's really dangerous there as both a shooter and a playmaker. So yeah, it would be nice to see them run a little bit more offense through him, and maybe that's part of your cure to your crappy bench is give him more minutes with the bench. You can, you know, you can lean on Kelly Oubre a little bit more with Wall and Beal, and then have Porter as the anchor with Frazier and Meeks and Scott, and see if that helps.
Yeah, I think they just need to blend the two units a little bit better so that it's not the stop and go of like we're doing great and then, you know, now we have to pick up kind of the pieces from what the bench did, you know, and then you're falling behind type of thing. If they can find a way to blend it. And I, you know, I think that there is potential for the bench. It's just that right now there's such a stark difference between guys like Wall and then, you know, guys who have to come behind him.
Yeah. And Jody Meeks is like, he's struggled through a lot of injuries in the last couple of years. So he is no sure thing. They also have So like Orlando, they also went spending last summer. They brought in Ian Mahinmi. I think it was 4 years, $64 million. And again, it kind of seemed like you bring him in, Gortat is probably on his way out. Then Mahinmi got hurt, missed half the year, didn't do much when he came back. Sarah, what do you think they do about Gortat and Mahinmi? Do you think they have to, you know, are they going to keep both of them, or do you think one of them might be on the market? Or not one of them. No one's trading for Mahinmi. Do you think Gortat is on the market at some point this year?
That's the problem. And personally, I wouldn't want to do that because I love the Polish hammer. Like, I don't want to, I wouldn't want to move him. Exactly. So, it's a tough spot. I just want to see Mahinmi come in and be somewhat, you know, productive, be healthy, be able to run some pick and roll. Maybe he could even come off the bench and, you know, be a role man off the bench and help mm-hmm. that unit. I don't know, but I would love to see that happen. I don't know that I don't think he can ever justify the money that they threw at him, but mm-hmm. if he could maybe salvage it a little bit. Because, yeah, I mean, it isn't a great situation to have those two guys, but I wouldn't want to give up Gortat just because you've made a mistake financially.
Yeah, I think, especially given their high hopes this season, it would leave them perilously thin behind Mahinmi if they gave up Gortat and didn't get a center in return. And Gortat's played really well in that starting lineup. Like, the last 15 minutes, we've all been saying, the starting lineup is great. It's the rest of the team that needs work. So I don't know why you would blow up your strongest part of your team just because, you know, they don't need the money this year. Like, they're capped out regardless, so it's not like they're not going to sign a big name free agent in November. Like, you made your choices at this point. Just deal with it and recalibrate next summer if you need to, I think.
And that's why they screwed up this year as well as last year, because before they signed Otto Porter, Porter had, you know, he had a significant cap hole because he was the third pick, but it wasn't 25 million deep. So this was the summer to offer up future first round draft picks for someone for taking on Mahinmi, so they could get another guy in free agency and then re-sign Porter. They didn't go that route. That's the problem. They even if they had to give up two first round picks, that would have been steep as hell. But if they had an insurance for some guy, why not? Why the hell not? That would have been so much better. Because Mahinmi is, like you guys said, like now their opportunity is gone. Now they're paying Wall, they're paying Beal, they're paying Porter. So the cap flexibility is gone either way. But that wasn't the case on July 1st. So they should have positioned themselves a lot better going into this summer. So not only did they mess up with Mahinmi last season, they did so as well this year.
Yeah, I mean, we talked about it when Porter signed that deal. Like, come 2019, when Wall's max contract kicks in, I think they're basically capped out already with those four guys on the books alone. So, like, this is the Wizards' core for the future. And it feels like they're going to run into what the Clippers did with Paul, Griffin, and Jordan, where, like, you just don't have the money to build a real team around them, especially once Gortat and Morris, I think they both come up for free agency in 2019. So if either of those guys leave, it's like you can't replace them. All you have is the mid-level exemption. So Godspeed. You better hope Kelly Oubre Jr. turns into a superstar.
I actually like him, but I'm probably the only one left at this point.
I like him. I don't know if he's going to, like, amount I don't know what to his what ceiling he is. Needs. Yeah.
Well, we shouldn't talk so loud about Oubre being bad after 2 years, because so was Otto Porter, and we crapped on him, and Otto Porter went, hey, everyone, shut the hell up.
I did not crap on Otto Porter, for the record.
No, that's because you're a blatant homer, but that's different.
Yeah, right. My wife's brother is a giant Wizards fan, and he crapped all over Otto Porter. I was like, just you wait. Just you wait. So now I kind of want, I should buy him an Otto Porter jersey for Christmas. That's,
that's a good one.
Yeah. So Mort, we heard Alana saying she does not think the Wizards are going to be as good as projected. Do you think if Wall and Beal stay healthy, could they be a sneaky dark horse for the number one seed in the East?
Oh, not the number one seed, I don't think. I think Boston or Cleveland has that one pretty locked up, either or, you know. For them to go past both, probably not. Maybe one. I mean, theoretically, Boston could implode a little bit because they had to like find their chemistry and find their rhythm and something like that, but not number one. I don't see that as being a relevant expectation. But high, sure, like number three, better than the Raptors, possibly. Mm-hmm. I mean, I wouldn't put him past it. I mean, John Wall to me is one of the absolute best, not just point guards but players in the game, and we consistently undervalue him as analysts and podcasters and whatnot, because there are always these sweet shooting or high flying players on the other side of the country, and Steph Curry and Russ Westbrook and Dame Lillard, and John is consistently the forgotten man, but this guy goes out and plays both ends of the court, unlike Westbrook, the MVP.
I'm never gonna accept that one.
And while still putting up 23 a game and what, 10 assists? I mean, yeah. Come on, that's ridiculous. Like, what he's doing is ridiculous.
Yeah, he's unreal. I mean, I think I'm with you in that number one's probably unrealistic, but like, depending on how long Isaiah Thomas is out with this hip injury, like, I don't know. Yeah, I could see it's within the realm of possibility that they're number two, but like, Beal is also.
His name is LeBron James. So
yeah, but so, like Derek, his
yeah,
name's Derek
the Miami
Rose.
Heat still exists. Thank you.
All right, so let's go into it. Alana, how do you have? What's your projected order of finish for the division?
I have the Heat going first, which is probably no surprise to anyone.
Love it.
I feel like you have to have really watched this team last year. And I understand why people aren't as, like, not even excited, but they just don't have as much faith in the team that aren't, like, devout followers of them. Because I feel like a lot of what's going on and what has me, like, just believe in them, you know, happens kind of off the court and behind the scenes. But I have them first. I do have the Wizards after them just because I mean, in this – between what Orlando and the Hawks, like I have to put the Wizards second. And then I guess I would put Charlotte above the Hawks and then the Orlando coming last. Yeah. So, but I don't personally think that the Wizards can get the one or the two, or I don't even think they can take the three spot in the East, but I could be very wrong. So.
Interesting. Where, out of curiosity, where do you have the Heat? Or, I mean, if you haven't done like a full set of
standings. No, I mean, it's hard because I feel like both Boston and Cleveland, like Mort said, are going to have to kind of refigure themselves out a little bit with, you know, the trade that happened. But I don't know. I feel like, honestly, I think the Heat could be like four or five if we don't get injured and if things go according to plan. That I'm high on them right now, so.
I think it's possible. That's a lukewarm take. I don't think it's scalding hot.
Oh yeah.
I mean, you know, give me like a week into the season and I'll be like, we're taking the East, like everyone else. But right now I'm trying to be as realistic as possible. LeBron is still LeBron. I really hate the Celtics, so I hope that they crash and burn as hard as possible.
You are welcome,
but there is
back
talent there.
Anytime.
Yeah, next time I come on, I'll wear my Fuck the Celtics shirt and we'll have a blast here. But yeah, I can't stand them. So, and Toronto's kind of one of those teams that, you know, could go either way for me too. So the East is really, it's hard to tell, but in a way that makes it fun because it's kind of anyone's for the taking.
Yeah, it's totally wide open at this point, especially after the IT Kyrie trade.
Yep.
Sarah, how do you have the division finishing?
I went Wizards, Heat second, Hornets, Hawks, Magic. I feel like Heat and Hornets might be close, but they, like you said, they're going to struggle shooting-wise, the Hornets still. I mean, they added... I will say that when I did my configuration here, I did not think about Malik Monk. I think because he was hurt, I didn't think about him actually being a part of the team still. And I don't know if that would change my mind or not. But I do have some faith in the Heat, so I think I'm going to leave them second.
I like it. Mort, how about you?
Wizards first, Heat second, solely because Malik Monk might be out for a long while.
That's literally the only reason you guys think that Charlotte won't overtake the Heat. Like, I'm just blown away right now.
Yeah. Well,
not the only one.
No, I'm like, I'm not hating at all. Like, I'm I'm just curious. Like, what, I guess, like, my curiosity is what makes you not, like, have faith in the Heat?
No, it's not that I don't have faith in the Heat. It's more that I have a lot of faith in Kemba Walker,
okay,
of course.
Fair.
And yeah. Like Brian, I also think there is, like, a reason for optimism with Dwight in there because they needed a rebounder. He sure as hell is going to help them in that area and defensively. And if you have a healthy roster and you have, like, a Nicholas Batum who might actually settle himself in nicer with a Dwight Howard there, then I think, like, the sum of all those moving parts are actually going to be pretty significant. Plus, I love their coaching. I love the fact that, you know, how they approach the entire game. I mean, they're defensive-oriented, and that just wins. That just wins games. I will say this, however, and that's going to please you. If the Heat and Hornets met in the playoffs, I would probably have more faith in the Heat than I would the Hornets.
Yeah, because Dwight will go missing in the playoffs, as usual.
Yeah, because Whiteside would just obliterate him.
Oh, yeah. Absolutely.
Oh my God.
So that's my reasoning. Trust me, I'm definitely not down on the Heat at all. I mean, they, despite my sort of skepticism if those kind of contracts, remember, all good contracts, but for the same team to sign all those deals, like, I still think it's a good, damn good team. And Whiteside, again, he's a star. I mean, he's just not like one of those uber superstars, but that doesn't matter. And again, Bam Adebayo, I mean, if he comes out of nowhere and just becomes like a Rookie of the Year candidate, then you are definitely free to correct me daily on Twitter.
I'll hold you to that one.
Yeah, definitely. And then I have Orlando fourth and Atlanta fifth because, you know, I do not like Orlando at all, but look at what the Hawks are working with. I'm sorry, Sarah. I know Dedmon and Bellinelli and Budenholzer. I know that, you know, the Spurs tree is just so alive in Atlanta, and you're just looking over it and like, oh, that's the Spurs of the East. But no,
not anymore.
Not
anymore. It was
dead. Spurs. Yeah, that is dead.
You have to accept it. Like, I'm not sure at which point in your grieving process. I think it's denial right now.
I've not been the same since Tim retired. You can't expect much of me.
At least you got Manu still.
It's true.
So far.
So I guess I'm the only one. I have the Wizards first. I have the Hornets second. I'm sorry, Alana.
Oh, that's okay. I'll forgive you.
I have the Heat third, Magic fourth, and Hawks fifth. And frankly, Mort, you just, like, you explained everything. All the reasons I'm optimistic about the Hornets, so thank you for that. It really is just, there's less margin for error with them than there is the Heat because of their lack of depth behind Kemba, but I just think Kemba hit a new level last year. I am a Dwight apologist. I think, as you said, Mort, I think Nick Batum's going to settle in better as a third option than number two. Marvin Williams started slow last year. He bounced back by the end of the year. You know, if this ankle injury for Monk is serious, that might change things, but Monk and Lamb off the bench gives them something. MCW is garbage, but hopefully they'll get a point guard in there, and that'll help alleviate those concerns. But I think both of those teams are going to be in the, like, the 4, 5, 6, 7 conversation in the East.
Charlotte and Miami could probably end up with completely similar records. I wouldn't be surprised.
Yeah, I have them very close. Yeah. I mean, it's not like I don't have Charlotte way ahead of the Heat. And then Magic and Hawks, it's the same thing. I think this is the year where the Magic, like, start to it. Just play Aaron Gordon at the four. That's all you have to do. You'll win 35 games if you play Aaron Gordon at the four. Just so I think.
I think the addition of Jonathan Isaac for me is the one that actually moves the needle. That dude is good, and he's defensively oriented. He's a 6'11", long-armed defender who can shoot.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm getting a little bit of a Kevin Durant, Giannis Antetokounmpo package going there, just not at the same caliber, obviously. But
he's in Orlando, so they're going to waste his talent, and then he's going to go elsewhere.
That is also why I have them at fourth, at least, because if he's going to break out big time, then, you know, theoretically they could go higher up, but no, that's not going to happen. And he's probably going to want out anyway in a few years.
Yeah, right, yeah. Exactly.
Enjoy the few years of a coming superstar, Orlando.
Yeah, you wasted Aaron Gordon.
Remember Shaq? 4 years, yeah. And then adios. Yeah.
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 Oh, God. All right. Alana, how many teams do you have making the playoffs out of this division?
2 to 3. I guess I'd say 3. I think the Heat, Wizards, and Hornets will probably be okay. The Hornets I'm a little bit concerned about just because of the whole Michael Carter Williams lack of a backup for Kemba, but there's still time to rectify that, so.
Yeah. Sarah, how about you?
Yeah, and the rest of the East is so uninspired.
Right.
Yeah, I would go 3 as well. Wizards, Heat, Hornets. Because, I mean, who do you have as locks beyond that? It's Boston. Boston's in, Toronto's in, Cleveland's in, Milwaukee's in, Washington's in.
I think the 76ers are going to make the playoffs this year.
I actually kind of feel like they are, too.
Don't encourage him, Alana. Don't encourage him.
I'm excited.
But yeah, so that's, you know, 3 spots that are up for grabs for sure.
Yeah. Yeah, I think that final spot comes down to Detroit and Philly. I think Miami and Charlotte are both comfortably in. What about you, Mort?
Yeah, 2 or 3, probably 3. I think something has to go terribly, terribly wrong for the Wizards, Hornets, or Heat for one of them not to get in. Yeah.
Yeah, it's got to be a Kemba injury. That's you. I mean, because they, you know, the Zeller thing really, like, the Hornets would have made the playoffs last year if Zeller didn't get hurt. Mm. So now they have backup for Zeller, Howard, but now they don't have backup for Kemba.
Yeah,
so
now
Kemba
just said it, so you jinxed him. He's going to go
down. Yeah, I
was
going to say, you really are jinxing him this whole time.
55 games, and I'm going to totally send him this podcast so he can get pissed at you on Twitter afterwards.
Knocking wood.
Yeah. The Philly sports curse of death. If I like you, you're going to get hurt. all right. Well, that will wrap things up for today's episode. Again, Alana, thank you for joining us. Just give our listeners one more reminder where they can find you on Twitter and where they can find your work.
You can find me at Alana Tahauer on Twitter. And then I write for All You Can Heat and Hoops Habit covering the Chicago Bulls. And those are both fan-sided sites. Thank you so much for having me on.
For sure. Yeah. Be sure to check Alana's work out, especially if you are into the Heat. In the meantime,
good Hoops content. Yeah.
And the Bulls. There we go. No one wants to read about the Bulls, Mark. Come on.
Sad truth, yes.
That's I have nothing. Yeah.
Well, in the meantime, give us a follow at the NBA Pod on Twitter. You can find all of our Twitter handles in our bio as well. Check us out on iTunes. Please subscribe, download, leave some reviews. We would love any feedback. And we're being hosted this year on FanRag Sports. So check them out on Twitter at FanRag Sports and for their NBA content at FanRag NBA. Until next time, I'm Brian Toporek, and I was joined by Morten Jensen, Sarah Chalea, and Alana Tahauer. Have a good one, everyone.
You too, Brian.